Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities. A couple of little anecdotes are stuck in my mind. We aired a piece produced by our Amper's partner station not that long ago, and Rebecca Crook-Stratton of the Midwakaton Sioux community was interviewed, and she talked about her daughter, a fairly little kid in grade school, being given an assignment to choose an American Indian tribe and write about where they lived and how they lived and what they wore and the kinds of food they ate and that sort of thing. And the disconnect between that and obviously the fact that the little girl was from a Native community. And then something else that I read that was written by our guest this morning, Dr. Kate Bean, where she talks about her daughter coming home from school singing in her own language. We're starting to make some movement toward bringing, bringing Native communities into the here and now, but it's not the Native communities that aren't in the here and now. It's the European American folks' perception of where they are. Dr. Kate Bean joins us this morning. Hi, Kate. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So your daughter, at least, does have exposure to her culture, and her classmates are aware that Native Americans are not people that lived 100 years ago and nobody really knows what happened to them after that.
Well, my daughter goes to a Dakota and Ojibwe immersion school, and so the majority of her classmates are also Native, and there is that cultural focus for her, which my other daughter, who's in a preschool without, where she's one of the only Native kids in the classroom, has a very different experience with that.
It's going to be interesting. I have a college-age daughter, and I'm thinking about young women. I guess I have a little more experience with young women, and I'm just imagining how fierce your girls are going to be when they grow up, because young women are really very fierce, and I can imagine your daughter setting the record straight here and there if the record needs to be set straight at some point in the future.
My daughters are very passionate. That way.
young women are a little bit, I'm just mildly terrified.
They're very sure of themselves.
Yeah,
When I say this, it's my job to make sure they stay that way.
Exactly. Well, just realize you will be terrified of your daughters, just a little bit terrified of them as they get older. But that's maybe not a bad thing. This, Our Home Native Minnesota, we heard another piece related to that this morning, again from our Amper's partner stations in Minnesota Native News, about a theater project that is also a part of this. And the idea is that Native people are telling the stories themselves. We've talked on this show before about how the people who write the history get to shape the history, and they get to say whatever they want about it. And Native Americans are finding a voice and saying, no. Here's a different perspective, and here's the other side of that story. Talk about this particular time in history. Could this exhibit and a lot of the other activities and projects that are going on in conjunction with it, could this have happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
You know, I think it should have happened because it's long overdue. But what we're seeing happen now is a narrative shift and the opportunity to really reshape the way that not only do others think about us and our communities and our histories, but how we think about ourselves. And I think that there's this narrative shift where there's a focus on our resiliency, there's a focus on our resistance, there's a focus on the positivity of who we are as Native people, and it's a really, really good time to be Native. You know, it's exciting. Part of doing that narrative shift, part of being a part of that, is it's so incredibly important that we tell our own stories. Those are our stories to tell. The Minnesota Historical Society 10 years, 20 years ago could not have done this in this way because they would have been telling somebody else's story, which is what we often saw was outsiders telling our stories for us. And as a public historian and as somebody who comes from a family that's heavily archived, what I learned firsthand from a very young age was that others were pretty much always getting our stories wrong. And so with the Minnesota Historical Society, I'm the director of a fairly new department that's been around for a couple of years called the Department of Native American Initiatives. And because the institution is diversifying and because there's a number of Native people on staff, which includes some very educated, wonderful Indigenous women, like my colleagues, Maddie Harper DiCarlo, Rita Walczak, Amber Ennis, we've been able to help with this shift and help to make sure that we can elevate the voices of our community.
You know, I had an experience with some friends just a week or so ago where I was passing along some information and someone asked a question, and I realized just, and I said kind of automatically, that isn't my story to tell. And
yeah.
I realized that there was something in me that was exhibiting reticence and respect that this wasn't my story to tell. And perhaps as a younger person, I would have gone ahead and given my version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that for institutions, and I think perhaps for folks in general, that it isn't just quote-unquote political correctness, that there is, all of a sudden, we are kind of going, yeah, oh, of course, this isn't our story to tell. Is it going a little deeper than just the idea of lip service?
Yeah, I mean, and you see that all the time with this new want from organizations and from non-Native individuals to want to do land acknowledgement, where, you know, here they want to be respectful of the land and of our presence here, but oftentimes they'll put the work on us by saying, hey, can you write this for me? Or can you, you know, can you do this? And sometimes it's just a statement, and we're sitting there saying, okay, but you still have our land, so what does this really mean? And I think what's key is the fact that we're making sure that Native people are part of the process, making sure that Native people's expertise is respected, and for people to do their own homework and to really make their own efforts is incredibly important.
I think it's difficult in a time of transition to understand what all the different rules are and to try to navigate respectfully and courteously when you're being made aware all the time of things that you had that you didn't know and things that you'd never taken into consideration.
Yeah.
I've had a number of guests on the show that while I have been asking them, you know, their opinions and careful to say, you know, in your opinion, how do you feel about? And sometimes they're also kind of uncomfortable with the idea that they or individuals one at a time end up speaking for a huge group of people, in essence.
Yeah. And I think you have to be really cautious of that. I mean, me as a Dakota person, I do not speak for all Dakota people. And part of my job and part of those of us who are sort of out more publicly talking as representatives of our communities is to make sure that the general public understands, like, we're just singular voices that do represent our families, but that we, part of our job is to ensure that we're elevating the voices of numerous people.
Right.
And that's one of the things with this exhibit that we really tried hard to do was to incorporate community voices, different community voices, a number of community voices, both past and present, through what we have in the archives of the institution, as well as going out and doing video and capturing newer interviews. Because when we went out to community members, what we heard over and over again is, yes, we want people to know about our history and who we are, but we want them to know we're still here, like Rebecca Stratton was talking about. You know, that contemporary presence is missing oftentimes. We you know, are so, our histories and our stories are so stuck in the past, sometimes where the general public does not understand our contemporary existence, but also where we've been for the last 100 years. There's a lot of stories there. There's a lot there that we need to teach our own kids and our own community members that are really important.
Decades ago, I mean decades and decades and decades ago, when I moved to northern Minnesota for the first time, there was a contemporary narrative, and it was extraordinarily unkind. It was not good. What is it like now to see a genuine effort being made, I think in particularly among Native people, to change a narrative and to bring a new narrative to the fore about this is where we've been, by the way, for the last 100 years? And I mean, as a young person, I loved what you said about this is a good time to be a Native person, because as a young person, there would be so many things now that I could aspire to, jobs that I could hold, education that I could have, work that I could be doing. And it seems as though there are options and pride in heritage and traditions. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're seeing in the work that you do?
Yes. I mean, I think what's incredibly important is for our young people to understand that our place, where we belong, is everywhere. You know, we don't have to limit ourselves. We don't have to, if we want to be a professor, we can be a professor in American Indian Studies. We can be a professor in any field whatsoever. We could be brain surgeons. And we are, and our people are everywhere. And we have that opportunity. I think that oftentimes we have been told, you know, because we're the generation coming off of the boarding school generation and the generation of our family members that really were taught that it was bad to be Indian, that it was bad to be Native, and had a sense of shame about who we are. And so now, you know, my daughter coming home singing her language, she has such pride in it, and she's so proud to be Dakota and Lakota, and she doesn't have that same fear, I think, that previous generations had. And so we're living in an exciting time where we can reclaim our own narrative in public spaces, where we can claim our culture, our language, and we're doing those things because our parents and grandparents fought hard for us to be able to.
Kate, one final question, and I ask questions that are none of my business, and I ask them on the air. Does your daughter have grandparents who see her singing her language, her pride in her culture, and how do they feel about that?
She does. Yeah, she definitely does.
Does it make them uncomfortable at all, or does it make them happy?
No, I think that they're incredibly proud of her, you know, and I think that we're also seeing a change as the shift happens, as we see more of our young people learning our languages. It's healing for the older generation too, you know, and it's a process we have to go through. And the one, you know, the thing about the exhibit, the Our Home exhibit, that I think is really beautiful is the fact that we have multiple generations represented within the exhibit. Throughout the exhibit, we have the voices of elders who've passed away. We have the voices of community members who are parents, who are working incredibly hard at local organizations and throughout our community for our youth. And then we have the voices of the youth themselves. We have some of the kids from the local immersion school here in the Twin Cities come in and record place names, Dakota and Ojibwe place names, so that the general visitor that comes in will look at these names and see the names of places that they recognize, like Chaska and Winona,
right,
and Nokomis, and they can say, oh, wait, that means something.
Exactly. And then hear it pronounced.
Yeah, have it properly pronounced.
Exactly.
That's definitely a goal. But, you know, it's a reclamation. I mean, we've seen that at Bede Makoska. We're seeing it all over the place where we have the ability to speak for ourselves, and our voices are becoming very, very strong.
Kate, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. It was a wonderful pleasure to talk with you. Dr. Kate Bean, our guest here on KUMD. She is the director of the Native American Initiatives Program, and she also helped to coordinate the Our Home Minnesota exhibit at the Minnesota Historical Society. Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.